Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today we're up in beautiful Cave Junction, Oregon, and we're talking with Lena Hurd, and we want to talk a little bit about baskets. I know you make baskets that you cook acorn in, but I know there are lots of different types of baskets and lots of different types of material and so much information to know about basket weaving. How did you first learn how to weave baskets?
Well, it's been 23 years I've been weaving, and I had a hard time finding a teacher because I wasn't raised around my tribe. So I went to a SEBA gathering. SEBA is California Indian Basket Association. Verna Reese was there, and she was teaching doll baskets. So I sit down and I made one with her, and I didn't realize that there was only a one-day class that they did that. And I came back the next day, and I wanted to do it again because I wasn't happy with how it turned out. And she said, well, we don't have class today. And her sister-in-law, Thelma, said, this girl wants to learn. Sit her down and teach her. So Verna put me in a corner. She got me started back again. And she would just come check on me as I was working on it. And at that point, I was hooked. I wanted to learn. I was working at Denny's at the time. And Jeanette Eberhardt would come in all the time. And I would talk to her. And I would tell her, you know, I really want to learn. And she would say, yeah, you know. And I kind of understand where she comes from now that I'm a weaver. Because so many people come up and say they want to learn. But they don't want to take in the time and the effort that it takes. Because it's a commitment. You know, it's a way of life, basically. And I kept showing her things that I was doing, what I was gathering. And finally, she said, you're serious. And I said, yeah. She said, okay, come to my house. So I came there and she started teaching me how to do. And of course, I lived up here at the time and she was in Crescent City. So I would take things and I would work on it and then take it back and she critique it for me. Oh, no, you should have did this. You should have did that. And I hooked up later with Verna Reese, and I've been with her ever since. As far as we gather together, we do things together, and I've learned so much from her. So it's pretty amazing to the amount of knowledge that's out there that she still has that I haven't learned yet.
Yeah. Now, there are different materials that you use to weave baskets with. What sort of materials are you using?
Willow sticks, hazel sticks, sometimes ceanosis, you know, the wild lilac bush. It's a nice fine stick, but they're not as strong as the others. We use willow roots, spruce roots, pine roots. Pine roots are more usually inland, though. Mostly use spruce roots. We also use woodwardia fern that was dyed with red alder bark, bear grass, maidenhair fern, five-finger fern.
What do you do with the ferns? I mean, it's hard for me to imagine a fern becoming a basket.
Well, with the woodwardia, you have to pick it. It's usually in the fall. It's during hunt season. We always make sure we wear red. Real ferns are pretty tall where we go, and they're taller than I am, and you're in there foraging around. You're cutting the fern, and you always have to be careful when you do it not to clear cut the plant, because you want to leave enough on the plant to be able to fold over on itself in the frost so that it'll protect itself. And you take off all the fronds, you leave, because it has the seed pods in it, you leave that right there on the plant also. And we just pack out the poles. Well, then you take the poles and you have to pound them down. And in each one of those stems is two pieces of woodwardia. And you take that out and you go get red alder bark, and I break that up and I boil it and I get it cooled down and I put those ferns in it, and you let them sit in there, and then you just keep coming out and turning, and you'll take them out of the water. Well, the air oxidizes, it brings up the color. If it's not the color you want, you put it back in for longer, and each time you do it, it gets darker. So you kind of have to stay on top of that. And then the maidenhair fern, you pick in usually the end of June, beginning of July, around that time. You have to keep going and checking, because if you pick that fern, it's very brittle, it's very sharp, it will cut you. Whereas when it's ready and you take off, you split down the stem, it's half red and half black. Well, you take the black side and you have to take a knife and you scrape that down the side. And when you get done, you can curl it around your finger like a ribbon. Whereas if it's not ready, it'll just go snap, 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 snap whenever you're doing it. So there's a time and place. It takes a full year to gather everything that you need, because everything has its time. Your sticks, your hazel and your willow sticks, you get in the spring and the fall. It's the new growth that comes in the spring, and then the really small new growth that by the fall you can pick again. The willow roots and spruce roots also, you pretty much want to get late spring, early summer. You don't want to go too early because the sap is going through your roots, so they'll break. So if you're cleaning your roots and they'll just pop, 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 or with the spruce roots, it's got that pitch in it and it'll just split in odd places and you get little tiny pieces where you'll get nice long ones otherwise. So the time is of essence. The same with the ferns, you know, you get the maidenhair in early summer. And then the bear grass is usually July around that time. And that also has to be picked after a burn. Same with your sticks, your hazel sticks, it has to be after a burn. Hazel sticks, you get these nice long sticks after a burn and they're very pliable. If you don't get them by a burn or a cut, they'll just break. Huh. And most of your utilitarian baskets, like your baby baskets, burden baskets, all of that's always made out of hazel. And also the cooking baskets, because you wouldn't use a willow because a willow has a flavor to it. So with a cooking basket, you don't use the willow because it would pick up that flavor. And also you use the spruce roots because when it gets wet and you soak them, they swell, it becomes watertight in the basket. Yeah. And you always do a 3-twine on the bottom to get that extra thick root so that it, when it swells, then it's going to be watertight.
Yeah, sure.
And then they did a little bear grass for decoration on them because there was no flavor picked up on that. You'll never see, unless it was made for tourists or whatever, you'll never see a cooking basket that has Woodwardia fern or black fern.
So if you go to pick them after a burn, how do you know in your picking areas when there's been a burn, or is it somebody is setting a controlled burn in those areas that you pick?
Sometimes they do. Up in Happy Camp, they work with more up there. And I think up in Witchpeck, they have some control burns down. It's something that we used to just follow forest fires, and we still do, you know, especially Happy Camp up that area. They have a lot of forest fires. So you can go up to 2 years after a burn and pick.
Oh, okay.
But after that, it gets harder. I mean, they can come in and they can cut the plants and it's still usable, but it's not as good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as much pliable if it's not burned.
And how does the burn affect the bug population? Does that help with that as well?
It does, you know, as far as it cleans everything out, it makes everything really healthy going through there. I mean, the nice thing about it is the flowers, the poison oak, everything is really fresh when it comes out. Uh-huh. So, and of course, that's always a problem because poison oak always grows around your sticks.
Yeah.
So you're always catching it somewhere or other.
And I've heard sometimes basket weavers keep the stick ends in their mouth while they're working, keep them wet, keep them pliable, keep them handy. And so having something that grows with poison oak seems dangerous to put in your mouth.
Well, it depends on the person, you know. I know that you can peel your sticks and you think that you're safe. I can store my sticks, bring them out, put them in water, and be making a basket, and I get poison oak.
Uh-huh.
Because the oil stays on there.
Forever,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So you just kind of have to be careful.
Yeah. And then I know that there has been some concern about pest herbicides being sprayed on plants because, again, people are putting them in their mouths while they're working with them. Has there been work done to
We're really, especially through SEBA, they've got a lot of programs going where they're, you know, working with Park Service and Caltrans and different places, trying to make them more aware of gathering areas that we go to. Because, you know, like I have to be really careful, like when making a baby rattle, because baby's going to have its mouth, you know, on it. So you want to make sure that you're picking in an area that hasn't had any spray.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I know one of the things that you had told me earlier that was interesting was the idea that when people put baskets, these beautiful, beautiful baskets, and they're wanting to put them somewhere where they can look at them and they don't want them to get damaged. So they put them in museums, and baskets were really meant to be touched. Mm-hmm. And it's important for the health of the basket because it's a living thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're thankful that they are there because we wouldn't have them otherwise. But basically, most baskets that are in museums, they're dead because they've died because they haven't had that touch.
Uh-huh.
That's why they become brittle. You know, they have a hard time. I have a basket that was my grandmother's, that was my great-great-grandma's. It's almost 200 years old, and you can still pinch the top and do what you need to do because it's always been handled. It's always been touched because it is a living thing. Uh-huh. It needs that. Yeah. And it's like with cooking baskets, they have a hard time. That's why I make some for the different tribes around here to teach their young kids. Because you can't take an old basket and put it in the water and soak it without it coming apart. because it's been in this fixed position for so long. If it hasn't been used right up to a certain point where they can, you know, it's still got that pliableness to it, once you stick it down in the water and you soak it, it swells up and, well, that loosens up all its stitches and it's not the same afterwards. So they have to be careful. And then a lot of museums treated their baskets with arsenic. So you have to be really careful. I've been to a few museums where we had to wear gloves because we couldn't, which was heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we couldn't even touch the basket because they had
they
treated it with
arsenic. They did that because they were worried about insects?
Bugs. And,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was their way of doing it, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that's heartbreaking when you go to something like that and you see all these beautiful baskets and you can't even put your hands on them.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, they're poisonous.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, like, all the work you do to make a beautiful, beautiful cooking basket. And, like, the first time that you heat that water in there and put that stone in there, it's got to be just a little bit anxiety-inducing.
It is and it isn't. I mean, it's pretty great to know it works.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because it's a lot of time. Yeah. I think cooking baskets are probably one of the most underrated baskets there is. They have so much work to them that much more than a trinket basket or anything else that you see these fine baskets that are so beautiful with all the design and everything. But with a cooking basket, you're continually cleaning roots to put in them. It takes a lot of roots. So that's a lot of splitting, a lot of getting ready, and nobody even thinks about that part of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it takes so much longer to make one of those than it does to make a trinket basket.
We've had such a fun time talking about basket weaving with Lena Hurd that we're going to come back again next week and talk a little more. Thank you so much, Lena.
You're welcome.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought.